Ladies and gents, welcome back to UTAS. Have you missed us? From a 6-0 spanking at MK to a 6-pointer in the bag, the last few weeks have had it all. Even a comfortable 2-0 win. And finally, you've got UTAS on hand to size it all up. When I say UTAS, we're looking a bit of a depleted outfit today. My name is not Jack Swindlehurst. He's away at the World Sheep Shearing Championships in Somerset, aiming to avenge his second place finish last year. My name's Julian Roberts, and I'll be taking over duties tonight. Opposite me is not Jordan Warland. Unfortunately, he's busy watching the reunion gig of a band that once got 2.5 stars in the NME for their debut single before breaking up for good. It's Tom Walker instead. How are you, mate?
Hello, mate. I'm not too bad, thank you.
It's a nice, yeah, it's a nice prepared intro, though, that, isn't it?
Isn't it just?
Yeah,
it's
good.
It's almost like it's written down.
It's almost like it's written down in front of me on a bit of paper.
Indeed.
We're looking a little bit Spursy, aren't we, Tom? A little bit sort of depleted.
Yeah, a little bit like Jack's done his ACL.
That's it.
Jordan's well off the Asian Cup.
Yeah. Well, should we get on to business?
Absolutely.
Right, there's only one thing we've got to start with here. Have you recovered from Saturday?
Yeah, just about.
It was a tough one, eh, lad?
Yeah, it was a big day, it's fair to say, I think, all round.
I mean, I think there's a lot to unpack from the game. Obviously, it was the biggest game not only of the season, but for a long, long time. In terms of, I went into it personally thinking we'd lose. I didn't think we'd come out of it with a clean sheet, first of all, or with 3 points in the bag. And it is the biggest 3 points of the season, though.
Yeah, I think so. Especially in kind of the context of what happened on the day. Obviously, I think Yeovil won, Macclesfield won as well. If we'd have kind of lost, then it would have looked very, very bleak, to be honest. I think whenever you beat teams around you, especially away from home, especially when it's Notts County and there's 15,000 there, it's always a bit bigger. I think it's probably fair to say biggest game since we got back into the league.
God, that's a big shout.
Yeah, maybe. I think the only ones I can really think of, obviously, you've got the Man United games, a little bit different, nothing really riding.
I was going to say, there's more jeopardy in this game than there has been in any other game that I can remember.
I think maybe for the club, in terms of its image, obviously, playing Man United is always going to be bigger, but I think...
And let's not go into the revenue side of things from that.
Yeah, we'll leave that one out. But obviously, being dragged into a relegation battle would be...
Falling into one.
Yeah, really.
Stumbling.
Getting ourselves into trouble would be the worst thing that could happen this season, I think.
We're not out of the woods, though. Let's make this clear. And a lot of players have come out this week and there's clearly been a PR push from the club. Let's not... Deegan came out, I think Calderwood also in the news came out and said, take it for granted now. We're not out of a battle yet. We've still got so much work to do. We're only halfway through the season. Obviously, it was a big game. It was almost... I mean, I think the important thing was not losing, but imagine being a Notts County fan right now.
Yeah, I'll be honest, before Saturday, before watching it, I was very much of the opinion that they'll be fine just because they'll be fine almost. But, I mean, you look at it and, you know, say, for example, that, you know, you need kind of 50 points to stay up or whatever, you know, they're nowhere near that now. And I think to say something, you know, sort of along the lines of they'll be fine because they've got a good squad, well, they're going to need to win another 8 or 9 games. And they've only won, 4 or 5 all season, probably.
And, I mean, I think more damning than that as well for them is they've conceded 57 goals.
That's ridiculous. Like, our defence is bad. And we've not conceded 57.
We're 47. We're second.
Again, it isn't great, but, you know, that...
57 goals in 28 games.
Yeah, it's looking pretty bad for Notts County, to be fair. And the thing that would worry me about Notts County, more so than the position they're in, is I think when you're in that sort of position, you look at what can we change. And, well, they've changed managers twice.
Twice, yeah.
They've thrown loads of money at it already in summer. I don't really know where they go. They haven't got... They've sort of exhausted the quick fixes and... It's going to take something pretty significantly better than what they've already done to stay up. So,
we'll move away from Notts County and go back to United for a second. But if you are a Notts County fan, you're thinking they've also appointed quite well. I think Neil Ardley's a good appointment for me. you'd be sitting there, I'd be sitting there going, Kewell may be a little bit risky, but he'd done a decent enough job at Crawley. But then you're sitting there as a Notts County fan, you're thinking, wow, Neil Audley's won promotion from this division.
Yeah, and kept teams up in this division.
And kept teams up.
Wimbledon, yeah.
Anyway, let's go to the game itself. I think, to be fair to say, it wouldn't be unfair to say that it was an awful game of football.
Yeah.
Let's really try to remember I know that's hard, but really try to remember some of the chances. It was just a nervous, tetchy game of football for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it was very nervous, and yet there was no real quality at either end.
Yeah.
Second half, we didn't have a shot on target. We didn't have a shot at all, I don't think.
Yeah, we didn't. We barely got out of our half second.
It was a performance. It was actually a very un-Cambridge-like performance, I think, in many ways. Specifically this season, second half, we had absolutely no intention of playing football. We had absolutely no intention of, you know, attacking, getting a second, getting a third.
Mm.
It was all just about getting bodies behind the ball and just being gritty and determined. And I think we were nervous with reason. We haven't been able to carry out that sort of game plan all season. And to do it is quite refreshing.
It strikes me that this is the sort of game that Calderwood was brought in for. This struck me as the sort of game where Calderwood, a bit more of a conservative, in inverted quotes, manager, who's happy to defend a 1-0 lead. I don't want to make him sound like Sean Derry here, but there's a part of me that thinks if Joe Dunn's managing that game, we possibly don't come out of it with a 1-0 win.
Yeah, I think it's just having someone come into it, maybe just a higher level coach, to be fair.
Yeah, possibly.
And you know, we've spoken a lot about how Joe Dunn probably got thrown into a situation which he wasn't prepared for, and that's probably right. But you look at the sort of level that Calderwood's coached at, and more recently at Villa, and you look at the sort of team that they were while he was there, and okay, a lot of this will be from Steve Bruce, who he was obviously there with, but they were quite a compact team, not that easy on the eye at times, but they got the job done more often than not. Obviously they didn't quite get promoted last season, but
what you've just done there for me is describe exactly what Cambridge United's performance was on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And
all we did is score a goal, and it sounds like a simple thing to do, but the only difference between us and Notts County was that we managed to score a goal, and what a looping header from the man himself.
Yeah, I think I've probably not heard the name Rory McCauley bandied around
quite so much. Yeah.
Probably since that day at Luton, because it was very, very reminiscent of that.
Like, yeah.
The way the ball came in, it seemed to take an age to drop in, and then obviously once it does drop in, it's pandemonium.
Went
a bit mental.
What I actually want to talk about though is not Greg Taylor, it was his centre half partner, it's George Taft, who for me over the past two games, two clean sheets, he's played very well.
Yeah, and that's a positive.
Bit of a recent resurgence, because we've spoken about it on the pod. He started the season, he looked completely... He looked a different player to his loan spells before. But he just didn't look like a football player to me. He didn't look like he had a clue what he's doing. And this recent resurgence might be, again, Calderwood's coaching.
Yeah, I think Calderwood played as a centre-half, didn't he?
I think so, yeah.
That's probably helped.
But so did Joe Dunn.
Yeah, I think Calderwood played to a higher level.
Yeah, fair enough. He played for Spurs, didn't he?
And, we should be careful not to maybe compare Dunn and Calderwood so much, because I think Calderwood is just a different level of coach. Yeah.
I mean, he's been there and done it.
Career speaks for itself. But in terms of Taft, yeah, I mean, he looked shot to pieces until Stevenage went home.
Yeah.
I can't honestly think of a good performance that he put in before that.
No.
Stevenage gets man of the match, and probably, but for a Greg Taylor winner, he probably gets it on Saturday.
I would actually go Gary Deegan Saturday, you know?
Yeah.
I think for once, and I'm a fan of Gary Deegan, kind of counterintuitively, because I'm not so sure if he's that good a footballer. I think he's got a lot of grit and determination, which are fine qualities to have, but at some extent you do need to balance that with a little bit of actual quality, especially if you're playing in that position. You're so pivotal to the entire team.
Yeah.
But on Saturday, what he was doing is doing that job to perfection, as far as I'm concerned, from what I saw.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, when you come away from a game like that and you've kept a clean sheet, I think pretty much everyone in the back, probably six with Deegan, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Kind of defensively minded players, that they all take credit. And
definitely.
Yeah, it's good to see us going putting a performance like that, because to be honest, we've been on the wrong end of those sorts of performances too many times.
Yeah.
It might not be pretty, but it is quite refreshing, to be honest.
Yeah. I think the same can be said for Jake Carroll. as well in this whole, going through this whole Calderwood defensive resurgence, should we say. I do say this, I am very conscious that 3 games ago we were spanked 6-0 by Milton Keynes. But let's focus on the present, shall we? A little note for the new boy. What did you think?
Difficult game. Did what he could.
A few nice touches.
Yeah. It would have been great if the overhead kick had gone in.
Yeah.
That would have been nice. But, yeah, it's a difficult game, especially when, you know, I think what he did well. Hopefully we'll see more of him in the next couple of weeks as we, you know, play at home and not in such a nervy game, one where maybe we're allowed to express ourselves a bit more. But clearly, you know, he comes with a lot of potential and he comes with a lot of promise. Seems to bang him in for Villa's youth setup. He's made appearances for their first team this season. I think he's played in the Premier League as well. What makes me quite excited about it, really, and it might be quite a basic thing to think about, is just who we've beaten to him.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Him,
I think Charlton, Coventry, and
Peterborough,
which is always nice to beat them to a player. I'd love to know the last time we beat Peterborough to a player, but yeah, it clearly a lot of pedigree and hopefully more to come. But Saturday was a little bit difficult for any forward player really to make kind of too much of an impact, I think.
Absolutely. Speaking of forward players, this is a good question from Jordan Moreland, I think a fan of the pod. We played 4-4-2 on Saturday, and at least we started a 4-4-2 first half. And I was making this point throughout the game quite drunkenly. Giovanni Brown playing as a left-sided midfielder with those defensive responsibilities doesn't, to me, I wonder what you think about this, suit the type of player that he is, and in that sense doesn't suit the system.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair comment. It depends how much effort he's putting in, because there have been games this season where I think people probably rightly so have questioned it. I think Giovanni Brown's best position is playing just behind the striker.
Yeah,
and I think
I completely agree.
And I still, to this day, think our best formation would just be a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can inspire hard work out of wingers who maybe aren't, you know, accustomed to having it. To be honest, I think maybe to criticise his work rate is a bit general. I think there's just been a couple of games where it's really stood out.
Yeah.
MK was one of them.
And MK was not the only, he was not the only person. You look at the other wing, you look at George Maris walking back. The same can be said for him that day. I think not just work rate wise is one side of it. I think also technically as a player, he isn't, to me, he's like as you say, he's behind the striker, he's pockets of space. He's working it in very tight little spaces. He's not a Dave Amu, and I'm not saying all wingers have to be like this, but he's not a Dave Amu, tap it round him and run. He's not a get to the byline, swing across him. He's not a search for your target man type of a player. He's just a lot more, I'm going to use the word creative. I'm not trying to say that wingers aren't creative, but he doesn't, for me, suit playing in that.
Yeah,
I feel left side of 4-4-2.
I just feel like you can get more out of him somewhere else. But yeah, if we're talking about Saturday specifically, I mean, I've got no complaints. So
on this Saturday coming up, Northampton at home, you'd play a 4-4-2? You'd play 4-2-3-1?
It depends on what sort of striker Hepburn Murphy's seen as, I think.
Well, he's got pace, what people say.
And he showed that. It's hard. If he can play up front on his own, play him up front on his own in a 4-2-3-1. If he can't, then you've probably got to play 4-4-2, to be honest, because he'll probably need some help up there alongside him, I should think. But I just like 4-2-3-1 as a system.
Yeah, no, I think
I don't know whether it's the best one for Cambridge United to play, but I just like the idea of having someone in the hole. And if you've got a really good player doing it, then do it.
And I also think you look at it the other side, it gives you a bit more of a support with Deegan and Maris, with then someone in front of them. So Maris gets to play that sort of quarterback role that he likes to play, but he's not the only attacking force in midfield.
Yeah.
So you still have your runs from deep from Giovanni, but you've got Deegan concentrating on defending, and Maris can be a bit freer going forward. on the whole. So Northampton, how do you see this one going?
It's a tough game.
Really tough.
Curl has done a really good job since he went in there.
They're only 4 points above us, game in hand, granted.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose to be fair, they've actually lost some pretty crucial players recently.
Matt Crooks.
Crooks and Van Veen.
Oh, Van Veen, he went to Scunthorpe, didn't he?
Yeah, he scored twice against us at Sixfield. It's a game that we've done well in, traditionally.
Yeah.
I think we've won our last two against them at home. Maybe even our last three, actually, possibly. And obviously, speaking overall, we generally don't lose against them that much. So,
no.
Obviously, touch wood. But it's one that we should be going into with a bit of confidence, having kept a couple of clean sheets, won a couple of games. But I think, ultimately, if we come out of Saturday the same or more points above the relegation zone, then it's a positive thing. And that's basically where we are at the moment. And it's not pleasant. It's not good to be in that situation. But if we can come out of it 5 points above the relegation zone with another game less to play, then that's probably okay, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting just looking at the table. So they're 4 points above us on 33, obviously a game in hand. But they've won one less game than us. So they've drawn a lot more. Obviously, we've lost a lot more. Goal difference-wise, also, they're on zero exactly, scored as many as they've conceded. We're on minus 22. So let's move on. I fancy ourselves getting something from this, you know. I think Saturday's important for that. What we are doing well this season, amongst a lot of negatives, is when we have a two- or three-game period of winnable fixtures, on the whole, we normally seem to get something out of them, especially at home. And our home form is something that's going to be essential in keeping us up this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, if we can retain some of that kind of mental toughness
on Saturday, a bit of mental grit, mate,
then hopefully our waveform might start to improve a little bit, because fuck knows that we need it. But at home, we've generally done okay, I think. But yeah, it's a bit of a grim situation that basically I'm probably not going to be too unhappy if we're just sort of, you know, the same amount of points above the relegation zone. And that's bad, but that's where we are.
In terms of going down, not necessarily just United, there's Macclesfield are on a bit of a, actually not a bit of a run, they are on a very, very good run.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've spoken about Notts. Then Yeovil, look
Yeovil
in trouble.
Yeovil are the ones that I'd be quite worried about, although they picked up a good win at Grimsby. And when I say worried, I mean...
Mansfield.
I mean worried for... At Mansfield, yeah sorry. And when I say worried, I don't mean worried about them catching us. I mean worried about them dropping down, because I think they're just awful.
Yeah, no, I think so too.
Do you know what? To be honest, honestly, I think there's probably two or three, maybe four teams that are worse than us in the league. Notts County are terrible. Their squad's on paper is better than ours, but you look at them on Saturday and you look at them over the course of the season, I just can't see them getting enough points. And that's basically the situation that they're in now. If you look at it logically, they're going to need, 50 points to survive? And they're
on 21.
21, so they need to do basically...
And I mean, they're catching Yeovil as it stands, 6 points adrift. Yeovil have got two games in hand on them as well.
Yeah, so they could be well adrift by the time that's gone. But I think in terms of relegation, in order to make ourselves safe, I think we probably need to do a bit more business than what we've done.
Yeah, we need another two or three players, don't we? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
and then we're looking at the playoffs, really.
Yeah, and then we're chasing down Lincoln. But,
Speaking of that side of the league, what's important about the Northampton game more than anything, I suppose, is the difficulty of the fixture after that. Exeter away.
Yeah, always tough.
Always tough.
Always tough, yeah.
Haven't they lost Jaden Stockley?
Yeah, lost Stockley to Preston. Signed Bowman, who scored a reasonable amount of goals, I think, for York. They're usually okay at picking out strikers, so hopefully, hopefully this one will be bad, basically.
Yeah.
but yeah, tough game again. Long way to go as well, that, isn't it?
Yeah. And then we've got Cheltenham the weekend after, but midweek.
See, the games like that, like Cheltenham, they're going to be ones that are going to define our season. Obviously, you need to be picking up points at home against whoever you play, but if you're going to Cheltenham and losing, then you get dragged back into it. And, you know, like losing to them at home, obviously, as we did earlier in the season, that's not ideal either. But
so we've got some questions from everyone listening. Everyone listening. It's about four.
Yeah. Big effort, to be fair, because they only had 20 minutes or so to get them in, and they did it. First one from friend of the pod, allegedly, James Denton. Does Ben Strang deserve the stick he gets? That's the first part, so we'll start with that bit.
Okay, so does Ben Strang deserve the stick he gets?
Yeah.
I think this is a really tough question. There's a good point being made that if Hepburn Murphy's the player we've been crying out for what, year and a half, 2 years and a half? A striker, full stop.
He is a striker.
Yeah. then it took the links of the new manager, I'm assuming the reason we beat Coventry and Charlton and Peterborough to a signing was because of Colin Calderwood, which is fine, right? Great. That's why we've appointed Colin Calderwood. It's a good reason for his contacts. And we've signed the striker we needed. So what the hell is Ben Strang doing there then? What's he been doing over the past few months? Does he just sit around? I'm sure he obviously does something. But I've always tried to sort of defend him because I was always of the opinion before this summer that we'd signed as many good players as we had bad. I thought for every Jake Carroll, you had a Brad Halliday. For every Liam O'Neill, you had an Uche. And I think I was, okay, maybe I was being a bit kind to him, but on the whole, I think that was an argument to be made. Since the summer, obviously, whatever reasons, we didn't sign a striker. Maybe he does deserve the stick he's getting. I'm struggling to see what's his role? Head of football operations?
Something on those lines.
Something nuanced like that. I'm struggling to see how, if his job is recruitment, he should be getting a fair amount of stick, right? I thought, given the position we're in, which we weren't expecting to be in at the start of the season, we should have players lined up start of January. I got text from you before the Stevenage game saying, why the hell haven't we signed anyone yet? And I think you were absolutely right.
Yeah.
For me, it was like first few days of the January transfer window, it should have been lined up, ready to go.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I think that point about Hepburn Murphy coming in because of Caldwell's links, I think that's exactly it. We've been told since sort of the minute that the transfer window closed, essentially, that we are working hard to get people in and they will be ready and they will be in and there will be money to spend in January. And yet it takes until a third of the way through the transfer window using the new manager's links to sign anyone.
I think it's hard not to give him stick.
Exactly. And I kind of, like you and like pretty much everyone else, when that happens, we're now more than halfway through the transfer window and that's still the only sign that we've made, obviously, unless they announce anything very early tomorrow morning. And I'm sort of thinking, well, what on earth have you been doing all these months? You know, that's your job. In the absence of a manager, it doesn't take a genius to know what we need. We need at least one striker. And
I could have told you that. I told you that in July.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose what I would say, just to add some balance and almost to play devil's advocate, I guess, is that you can't criticise him by one measure and then not give him praise by the other measure. So, yeah, summer was dreadful. We've been over that thousands of times.
Yeah.
Didn't bring enough players, weren't ready. But as the head of football operations, he made, in my opinion, the correct decision to remove an underperforming manager. He's brought in a manager with the right contacts to get players in. Mm. Now, maybe that's just, you know, him delegating, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think, to answer the question bluntly, it's very hard not to give a lot of criticism to the head of football operations at a club that sit 20th in League Two. And that's pretty much, I think,
we've been aiming to achieve far more, not just aiming to achieve, realistically, we should be achieving far more than that.
Yeah, I mean, we're not a small club in this league. You know, just kind of running through the table briefly, you know, you see like Macclesfield, Yeovil, Morecambe, Cheltenham, Crawley, Newport to an extent, Stevenage, you know, Forest Green in the playoffs, Colchester, I'd argue similar size clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you know, we and budget wise, we had it told to us that we had at least a mid table budget. We had it told to us face to face by the directors. They said it's competitive, and it's not been competitive, and therefore he has to take the stick for that, as he said he would do in summer. And, you know, I'm not seeing any responsibility taken, but there we go.
There's also this point that a few people have made, and obviously this is the sort of thing that can't be clarified unless he says it himself, so we'll take it with a pinch of salt. But by all accounts, we did have we might have had transfer targets lined up that Strang had picked out, but Calderwood came in and said they are by far away not good enough.
That seems like a logical explanation.
Yeah.
And again, it could be speculation.
Again, that could just be, someone just criticising Strang for the sake of it.
It could be wrong, it could just be people coming to conclusions, but from my kind of uninformed, I'm not in the know, but that seems like a pretty logical conclusion to make, that if they've been working hard on transfers since September, and none of them have materialised, then something's going wrong somewhere, and it's probably logical to assume that it's probably that they're not that good.
Yeah.
Based on what we've seen previously, basically. Moving on slightly, a question that we've kind of had a little bit, answered a little bit in kind of previous pods, I guess, regarding Maris, and it's almost a question, is it important to invest in Maris or elsewhere, and that's Harry Fletcher.
I think this is a good question. We have touched on this in the past, haven't we?
Yeah.
George Maris is a fantastic footballer. Let's make that clear. I think he's got... For me, he is one of our best players. And if I'm going to hold that opinion, I have to say, of course, it's worth investing in him. It would be counterintuitive of me to say he's one of our best players, we shouldn't invest in him. I think he's... Who are we aiming to sign that's of a better quality? Would be my argument to that, my answer.
I think that's fair, and I think I'd probably agree with you. I suppose.
Having said that, I don't think his performances this season have been to his level, but then whose have been?
No, of course. I think I'd agree with that. I think from my side, it's easy to stick a £3,000 a week contract in front of him.
Yeah.
Whether he accepts it or not is another thing, and that's a position that we're in now.
Yeah.
So,
From the club's perspective, do everything you can.
Yeah.
From the player's perspective, I'd almost tell him to go. If he's getting offers from League One clubs, I wouldn't be surprised to see him walk out of that door.
Yeah.
But from my perspective, I would invest in him.
Of course. And just to... a couple of things just to kind of wrap up the question section.
Mm.
Sort of a one-name answer, I guess, or two-name answer. Tom King asked us, the best and worst current player to go out and have a few beers with.
That's interesting. Keith Keane, the best. I reckon you'd have a nutty night. Your current players, is it?
Yeah, it's current
players. Oh, shit, I thought it was any players. Current players, Greg Taylor, best. Just a lovely man.
Scored a goal as well.
He did score a goal.
Goal bonus.
I'll tell him. Yeah, he'd be buying the rounds in.
Don't go to Jabba and Beery. he scored a few.
Worst?
Who
seems like a boring prick?
That's basically...
That's basically what this question is.
Who do you think's a laugh and who do you think's shite to go out with? I feel almost bad answering it.
I don't know.
Have we got any sort of 17-year-olds around the squad? Because that'd
be weird.
That'd be rubbish.
Yeah.
They'd have to stand outside.
Yeah. David Ford, you wouldn't bring your dad out with you, would you?
No, or your granddad.
Or your granddad.
Should we just leave it with that one?
Leave there, yeah.
Another one from Josh Hunt as well. We haven't actually done an update on this in a while. He wants to know, who is Dan Lynch and why is he above me in the Fantasy Football UTAS League? Now, as I say, we haven't really done an update on this. Josh Hunt is a... around Ely, around his probably his own house, is known as a fantasy football legend. So do you want me to just fill for a bit while I...
No, I've got it.
I've got it.
Here's the league table. Now bear in mind that a winner gets a UTAS mug.
So that's
pretty top prizes here. So we've got Dan Lynch top. No idea who you are, Dan. Well done, mate. Josh Hunt second. Weetabix and EFC. Steve Sexton's third. Chris Wilkerson's fourth, Billy Richardson fifth. Oh, there's... Sorry, I just thought I'd get to sixth, because that's Julian Robertson's sixth. I'll start scrolling for the other lads. If you want to fill, while I try to find you, mate.
Yeah, I'm very much at that point with fantasy football now where I've very much given up. I mean, I'll play the wild card at the end of the transfer window, and then...
48th.
48th, out of how many?
Quite a lot, actually. Not to pick ourselves up. I think what's even funnier than that, though, if you really want to do something very funny, is try and find fucking...
You've been scrolling for a long time.
I know, yeah, I can't find him.
I'm not a professional writer.
Oh, Jack Swindlehurst, 50th, there he is. GDP Rovers.
Wow, that's a funny...
Amazing, thing. Yeah. So, Josh, mate...
Keep going.
Keep going. You're only a couple of points off, mate.
You're only a couple of points off that shitty...
Shitty mug.
So, yeah.
That's it. That's well, thanks for your questions.
Question section.
We'll be back very soon. Hopefully there won't just be me and Tom. Hopefully Jack wins his sheep shearing competition. Representing Cumbria, he is. Peace and love. Goodbye from me, Julian. And goodbye from you, Tom.
Absolutely. Goodbye.